Welcome to Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
Listen to the show.
Well, good evening, and welcome to The Man's Voice. Glad to have you here with us. If you're listening on the line or on your computer, remember, you can call in and join the conversation at 646-668-8740. You can also go into the computer on a link. I think that most of you who got this on Facebook, the link is there for you. You can also go into Facebook and pull up The Man's Voice and listen to us there as well as previous other shows. So, panel is here. Good evening, gentlemen. Say hello.
Good evening.
Good evening, David.
Hey. All right, Don, let's talk about some things. Why don't you start off with this?
Very good. Welcome to A Man's Voice. And we've got a plethora of different topics I'd like to talk about, David. First
okay.
of all, I'd like to talk about the Affordable Care Act. Health care is a major issue, and a lot of people call it Obamacare, but it's correctly titled as the Affordable Care Act. Frank, what are your feelings about that?
Well, let me tell you, I have very strong feelings. I'm a chairperson for a state organization, Virginia Interface Center for Public Policy, and the Johnson Corporation sponsors us in that regard to the Affordable Care Act. So we've been trying to get the people that are at the margins, the people that are the donut hole in the Commonwealth of Virginia, to get a law passed that would allow them to be part of the Affordable Care Act. But here's the deal. Probably 25 million people are involved that heretofore did not have insurance or were not covered adequately or had problems with cancer and things like that where they had where they couldn't get insurance. So I think the Affordable Care Act has never been a benefit to me. It's a benefit to people, other Americans that don't have the ability to have insurance, either because of their employer, either because of the amount of wages they make, or either because they've already had a problem, a health problem. So I think the government's in the business now. We spend more money than any nation in the world that's an upscale nation in regard to our health care, yet we have low return and results as a result of that. So I think the insurance companies are sticking it to us right now. I think the Catholic Church is sticking it to us, and I'm a Catholic right now in regard, and I think that our new president will stick it to us as well, and that will be catastrophic for a lot of people, particularly those people who voted for him in West Virginia and other locales.
So
now,
again,
did you get the sense that I'm positive for this health care program?
Well, you know, there are a lot of people that are benefiting from this program, Obamacare. And do you think that the current president-elect is going to be able to appeal this without a plan?
There is a plan, and there is a web page. The web page doesn't say anything. There's a web page for it. The Speaker of the House brought up and told everyone, and everyone went to the web page, and all the news media and myself looked at it, and it says absolutely nothing. So I don't know what they're going to do. They don't have a plan. They just want to get rid of something.
They don't have a plan, but I heard many people say if it had not been for this, Obamacare, they would not even be alive today. Bernie Sanders is in Michigan right now with a big big rally about that. Bruce, are you here?
I am. I just came on. Sorry I was a little late.
Talk to us about the Affordable Care Act.
Well, you're right. Bernie's here and a few other people. I'm of a simple belief of none of us really know what's going to happen until we get into it a little bit. Remember, as the Democrat said earlier, you're not going to know about our plan until you pass it. Well, that wasn't right either. But what I kind of push back on a little bit is all this posturing about it's terrible, it's this, it's that. I don't think none of us know anything of what it's going to be yet. I do agree that the Republicans need to have something to tell the public, all of us, what they're going to do to replace it before, months or a year afterwards. That's not right. I agree with that. But I also don't think it's right for us to say this is bad, that we don't even know yet. They haven't said anything. And to David's point, there isn't even anything on the website yet of any substance. So I'm going to hold my judgment until I see what is or isn't in their proposed plan.
Ron, what do you think about this?
Is Ron there?
This is Frank. I'd like to make a comment in regard to the last comment. I think withholding our judgment, in my mind, is the wrong thing to do. And the reason for that is because we have a Affordable Health Care Act that's been passed by Congress. I think everyone agrees it needs to be modified to be improved and made better. But if you withhold your judgment, then you're allowing people to come up with a plan that they don't have right now based on their interests without your input. And I don't have that type of faith and confidence in the people that have been opposed to this Affordable Care Act for the last 4 years. And so withholding my comments would only mean they would construct a plan that would not be inclusive of the total population we have right today. And that looks like where we're headed. We look like we're headed to coverage based on the Speaker of the House's comments on CNN within the last 2 days. He indicated that he's going to have coverage for these people who have catastrophic illnesses, but it won't be at the affordable prices they're having it right today, but it will be more affordable for those people who have good health.
Well, we know in order for this to work, it's got to be a strong buy-in with that younger population. Jeremiah, you represent that younger population. What do you think about Obamacare?
Well, I agree with Frank. We can't wait, sit here and wait. And you say you said we want to pass judgment. I believe we can't sit here and wait and rely on the new office to set this thing up going forward when it might have a few negatives as far as, like you said, for the younger crowd, the younger people. Everything needs to be proactive. We're going to be going in a new direction, but I believe we should be proactive with it. And also, I mean, with me, I have insurance through my employer. I'm fortunate for that. But there's a lot of young people that does not have insurance, and they don't understand the importance of having medical insurance. So they should have a focal point on a younger crowd by doing certain things to inform, market, and advertise the importance of having good insurance going forward for younger people. For having
Don's going to be – go ahead.
Can everybody hear me now?
Yes.
I can hear you, Ron.
Okay. Sorry about that. I had to switch over to my phone because the computer just wasn't working. But I heard everything that everybody said so far, and I do have some comments about this because if I'm not mistaken, I think I'm the only panelist that has actually benefited from the Affordable Care Act because I lost my previous job in July and I had a lapse of 3 months before, thankfully I'm working now, but I had 3 months there where I relied on the Affordable Care Act because, and also I want to clear up maybe a misconception that the Affordable Care Act is for poor people, and I, and by no means consider myself poor. You know, I was making $110,000 a year, just throw that out there, so I'm definitely not poor. But when I lost my job and I went online to try to get my own insurance coverage on my own, it was outrageously expensive. And so I said, let me just look into this Affordable Care Act and see what it's all about. And I had somebody help me with it because it was a little convoluted, the entire process. But somebody walked me through it and was able to get me fairly decent coverage for about $700 a month for myself and my spouse, which, you know, still $700 a month. I didn't get any discounts, by the way, because of the amount of money that I made. So I didn't get any discounts whatsoever, but I was able to purchase health insurance benefits through Affordable Care Act for about $700 a month. When on my own, it would have been well over $2,000 a month for anything even comparable to what I got. So, and you know, as I said, I made decent money, but for me, $2,000 a month was going to be a big stretch. So, you know, I was thankful for it. You know, I'm scared to see what might happen, you know, with any new plan that is put out there to replace it. I hope I'm optimistic. I have to say I'm optimistic, and I'm open to hopefully it being something, the plan being something that will benefit people and not be hurtful to some people that need this coverage very badly.
Ron, I don't think you're the only one. I as well lost my job, and I needed to obtain insurance for me and my family. And they were talking almost half of my mortgage payment for health care, and I couldn't afford it. I thank God for Obamacare. And I'll tell you, if they try to appeal this without replacing it with something better, they're going to have an uprising in America like never before.
Don?
Yes.
Don, this is Bruce.
Yes.
I agree with all of you about the fact that if they don't have something to explain to the public that's going to replace it or enhance it or change some things and call it whatever you want, new and improved or something totally different, I agree with you. It's foolish and it's, what do I want to say, irresponsible to not have something that people can say, okay, this is what we can compare it to. However, remember, gentlemen, and you're talking about how wonderful Obamacare is, and it does have some wonderful parts in it. There's parts that apply to me that I wouldn't have had otherwise. So I get that. But when it was created in large part in secrecy. We did not know what was going on. We were made some major promises that didn't come true. And the only way we now feel somewhat comfortable with the Affordable Care Act is over time and seeing how it plays out. So to say that Obamacare was laid out in its entirety and in detail before anybody used it is not true. It started the same way this is starting. And again, I'll say one more thing and then I'll stop. We need to have us explain to us what that new plan will be. I agree. To leave us hang out on the clothesline with no explanation is just as bad as the way Obamacare started.
Well, I disagree with that. I disagree with that comment because Obamacare didn't start that way. Let me tell you the difference. When Obamacare started, there was no national care system, period. And there were 20 million Americans who were going to the emergency care to get treatment. That's completely different than what it is today. Today we have about 25 million people who are directly involved in that care program and who have had some type of care system that are either paying low premiums because they're being subsidized and made affordable, or high premiums, and those people are complaining or bitching because of the high premiums, or have lost their doctor because that was one of the comments that was made, that you're going to be able to retain your doctor, and supposedly some people weren't able to do that. So there was no care system in America. Developed countries, we're the only developed country that doesn't have a care system up until that period of time. And the argument, I think, is not, the Republicans do not have a plan, haven't had a plan. They've got six plans that they're arguing, fighting over. And the issue is that in reality, they don't want a plan. They don't want a national affordable care system. Now, that care system that we have could have been made better if we had just said, okay, the national government's going to be the insurer. But we didn't. We participate with insurance companies, and therein lies a problem right there. And we don't have some other things that are missing from this national care system at all. And that's because politically the way it came out was we had a Democratic Party in full support of this care system, and the Republican Party was opposition, total opposition to this party. But some of these states are Republican governed states, and they have implemented this affordable care system for these people that are in the donut hole. Those are the people that make less than $12,000 a year who aren't covered at all. So if you covered those people, you'd probably get another 10 million people in the United States. For instance, in Virginia, they're not covered. So these people are going to these community health care centers, et cetera, and still going to the emergency care system. Now, I'm not affected. I have coverage from the military, and now I have Medicare coverage. And Medicare is also going to be affected by the new government administration. Social Security, Medicare, Affordable Care Act. Those are institutions that are going to have some of their legs sawed off of it. Because in keeping with the American tradition, there are a lot of people who do not believe in subsidizing their money to help someone else.
Now, that's got to be a travesty. The richest country in the world, and we cannot get a good care program for the health of our people. And when our people are healthy, they work better, they talk better, they feel better, they live longer. This is a man's voice, a man's voice. Give us a call, 646-668-8740. A man's voice. Listen, let me ask you this. What do you think about the Russians and their cyber space and the effect they had on the election? Do you think that the Russian cyber movement affected the election with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump? Who would like to answer that?
I'd like to answer
I think that Donald Trump is being blackmailed or will be blackmailed, and I think, yes, they did have an effect on the election. And I think that he's working with them, and I think he's working with them because of the things they're holding over his head. And the last thing is that if his wife, if he was in the military, he wouldn't have a security clearance just on the fact of where his wife was born.
Hey, Don?
Yes.
I'd like to add something to what Frank just said. You know, I keep hearing the Republicans say that, first of all, let me say that I do 100% wholeheartedly believe that the Russians did have an impact on the election, and let me explain that. We've got the Republicans saying that there was no impact whatsoever. They, of course, they've admitted that they've hacked the system, but they said that it had no impact whatsoever on the results because the polling places, there was nothing going on in terms of, you know, hacking into the security of the polling places. However, what the Republicans are not saying is that all the information, all the negative information that got out there before the election about Hillary Clinton actually probably, in my mind, for sure persuaded some people to change their mind about voting for Hillary and maybe either didn't vote or voted for Trump. So, yes, I do think that it definitely had an outcome on the election. The Republicans are not telling you that part of it. They're just saying that the polling places were not, you know, were not disturbed in any way.
Who else has a comment on this? Yes, sir.
Well, let's look at both sides of the coin. I hate to keep being the devil's advocate, or I don't like that terminology. The non-devil's advocate, I will make myself, is again, I tend to agree with Ron and Frank that they probably did have some kind of influence, but I'd be the last one to tell you how much, and I would beg to differ. Either any of our other panelists, good friends of ours, know either. We're all supposing. We may or may not ever know. However, the point I really want to make is don't leave the impression, unless you're telling me that this is what you believe, that Hillary had nothing to do with her failure, that somehow it was, maybe not all, but the majority of it had to do with the hacking of a system or interference of some sort. I don't believe that for a minute. I believe that she had a number of people around her that maybe didn't perform so well, that didn't advise her so well. I'm not saying that it may have even been her personally, but the people that surround her, her team, didn't seem to read things very well. I mean, I heard one thing where two of the key states she should have spent a lot of time in when she recognized they were slipping away were Wisconsin and Michigan. She didn't spend squat there. She ended up in Pennsylvania chasing a vote that was really kind of silly. And the only reason I point that example out is because if she was getting advice, that didn't seem like very good advice for her. And whether you like Hillary or not, whether you voted for or her or not, it's a team against a team. And I don't think one minute that the hacking that goes on, including the Russians and several other countries, is going to ultimately sway the entire election of the voting public. When we've got, look at the press. Look what the press does to one party. The press, I think you and I would agree, would be much better off if the press would just give us the facts and not try to persuade any way, left or right. But they don't seem to want to do that anymore. So there's a lot of factors that came into play. A lot.
Well, this is Frank again. I'm happy with the press. All right. So I've never, other than what I hear, comments that are made, I have not had a negative opinion of the press. You know, I take the information. There's enough press and enough different people coming from the press that have different opinions that you can listen to. And there are some that, you know, that are laughable. And we do have certain stations that are oriented or papers that are oriented, whether it be Breitbart or whether it be Fox or whether it be CNN, they're oriented certain ways. And you know that because they've got a label on them. But my concern is this right here. It's not what Hillary did. It's what the Russians did. And it's what happened with the FBI director who testified that he doesn't release information early before an investigation is complete. And that was kind of a laughable situation with the Senate when he was being interviewed because on two occasions he made announcements during her election. Now, President Clinton indicated that the reason, one of the two reasons why she lost was because of the FBI director that she she could not overcome that. Okay? So that's one issue. Why he did what he did is a big issue. They're investigating that right now in Congress, as they should. And to have the Russians, to have a president-elect that has a friendly relationship with the Russians is just totally inconceivable and unbelievable. Fortunately enough, I mean, these guys are not our buddies, and they are not our friends, and we are working cooperatively together with them wherever we can, but in no way, I think we're standing by for what they call the big takeover, the Russians taking over the United States.
Now, we got a situation, Frank, where Donald Trump has said, I would like to be friends with Putin. And even when President Obama expelled diplomats from Russia out of the United States, Putin didn't even respond. He's waiting for Donald Trump to come into office. Can anyone imagine what's going to happen over the next month or two?
What do you think is going to happen, Don?
I think there will be a friendship between Donald Trump and Putin.
There's already a friendship between Donald Trump and Putin. I just think it'll be more public.
I have an interesting perspective to share with everyone, and it's pigging off Frank's comment about the Russians taking over. And, you know, some people may think that that'll never happen, but I don't know how many of you have been to South Beach in Miami recently, but you walk around and every day, I'm there quite often, every day you see more and more Russians that live here, that travel here, and that actually a lot of the restaurants on the famous Ocean Drive with the Art Deco buildings and all that, they are Russian-owned right now. So, and you go to Sunny Isles Beach, just a little up north the coast, and it's full of Russians. So, you know, I don't know.
And you're going to some of the most expensive shops in Bell Harbor, and they're owned by Russians.
Yep.
Hey, guys, do we? And I ask this only as a objective question. Is our government going to be that stupid to allow a Russian takeover without a fight?
Well, you know, one thing about it, we know that when President Obama got a mandate 8 years ago when he came into office, we were involved in the two wars, and America had a sentiment of let's not get into any more war.
Right, right.
And I think Putin just read that perfect. He said the United States is not going to be the bully big dog that it used to be. Now is my time to get aggressive. What do you think about that?
Wait a minute. But I'm sorry, I had technical issues, so I'm calling in. But my thing is, there are a lot of things that go on in the White House and the Oval Office that the public does not know about.
Right.
I think there's a lot of deals that will happen between Putin and Trump, because I think Trump is already under Putin some. If you look at a lot of the deals that Trump made, they were financed by the Russian dollars, or whatever they call it, rubles. So I think there's a lot of things that will happen in the White House that we won't know about. And so, yes, when you say, will the government allow it? No. But will Trump allow it? I think is the question. Yes.
But what positive?
Well, I think he's going to get turned out by the CIA. I think he's going to get turned out by the CIA and the intelligence communities.
Remember, he hires the CIA director.
Oh, no, yeah. I'm familiar, but there are people that are going to go, these are people that are analysts that are going to actually speak out and expose some stuff, you know, not directly but indirectly through newspapers, et cetera. So I expect you're going to see a lot of that during the next couple years. And so, you know, there's going to be conflict with the employees and the president's office, including the National Security Office, okay?
And this has happened in the past, but I think it's going to really be big time now because he's actually alienated the intelligence community. And I guess his name is Papaino, who's going to be the new CIA director, seems to be an ordinary American citizen that understands that the Russians aren't our friends. But I think that they have some information on the vice president, and the indication is that it's sexual and it's business loans. And that's typical what happens when you are working in a country like the Soviet Union or China. You know, they're going to take advantage of that to leverage their situations. So I think that, and the problem with all of this is NATO. Right now, you know, I have some people that correspond with me, and there's a big exercise going on in the United States in the Eastern European countries, and the equipment is coming in to Germany. Of course, it looks like a war to citizens there, the amount of equipment and the amount of buildup, but that's the current administration showing the Eastern Europeans that they do support them, because the Eastern Europeans are concerned about the Russian government overtaking them. And I think that's where Trump will give away and concede that he's not going to support these folks, even though he's required to do so by NATO. So I think that's what the problem
is. And you know something, Frank? You're absolutely right, because here's a situation where we got a president that will not even divulge his income tax. So we don't know what involvement he has in other countries when his family controls a majority of businesses in other countries all over the world, and he will even reap benefit financially from those operations. This is a man's voice. That's 646-668-8740. You're welcome to call in. A man's voice. 646-668-8740. Go right ahead, sir.
No, what I was going to say is, if you look at the strategic pieces that Trump has been putting in place, there's a lot of family members in that office. There are a lot of things that can go on that we will never know about. That I suspect when Trump leaves office, somebody, his family will have money for the rest of their 10 generations from now, because it'll be a mixture of all kinds of funding from wherever he can get it. But I, you know, I'm concerned about all of this in terms of the strategic pieces that he put in his family members. I've never seen so much nepotism going on in the White House. I thought it was, when it happened before, it was a big issue. Now, I mean, his daughter, his son-in-laws, everybody has these positions.
And you know something, David? Before, people worked for Don Trump, and he said, "You're fired." Well, guess what? He works for us now. And we as people have to know that. We got him going through the inauguration on Friday. John Lewis, one of the civil rights leaders, has come out and say he denounced him as the president and will not appear at the inauguration. What do you think about that?
Well,
I'll tell you what I think about it, Don.
Go ahead.
I think it's crap. I respect John Lewis tremendously. He is a champion for civil rights and a great district representative for Georgia. But his stunt of not showing up is crap for this reason, for this one reason all. With the amount of influence and power that he has, positive power, he should find a better way, if he wants to object to the incoming president, a positive way is maybe the better word, to voice his opinion, because to show his disagreement, I guess, because people look to him as a leader, what he does and what he represents, and if he could show that same thing in a positive action instead of a negative action, he would have my full support.
But, okay, I have a question. Let me jump in here. No, wait a minute.
This is a hot one.
Let me say this. So what you're saying, then, Bruce, is for all the Congress members who did not support Bush, they should have showed a different way of doing it, right? Because they weren't supporting the President of the United States. Now we got a congressman that says, you're taking the only bust of an African-American, which is Martin Luther King, out of the White House tomorrow on Martin Luther King Day and put Winston Churchill in the White House. So he's not showing up because he worked with Martin Luther King. So we should look at him and say, wow, you should do better. What should we tell all the other congressmen who have this problem working with President Obama?
David, I agree with you. The other legislators, when the table was turned and it was Obama coming in, should have found, and I would have loved to have seen them find, a positive way to show their, if I have to use the word, disagreement or non-support. So the answer is yes, they should have. I agree. So when's it going to start? You know, this.
Well, let me just tell you, right?
We talk about it. Always in a, I'm not going to do this, and he's going to do that, and blah, 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 instead of trying to, and it's not us, gentlemen. I mean, we're trying to be a discussion here, but it's our leaders that need to show that example. All of them, both sides.
Well, there's nothing conciliatory about the new administration coming into office. All right. So, I mean, if you were a Christian nation, you wouldn't do the eye for eye type of thing. But we're not a Christian nation. We're not even a religious nation. And what's going to happen is there, you know, I don't think that he could express his outrage any better than not showing up to that event that's going to bring him in the office. Now, let me just say, I have believed in the past in respecting the office of the president and the individual that's in that office. And I will try to use language at all times showing that type of difference to the president. But let me just say that it looks to me that the current and coming in to office person is quite similar to George Wallace. All right. I was in the military in the 60s when George Wallace was doing his thing. The things that he has said, I do not want to make anybody think that I don't want to encourage anyone to be in good relationship with that individual who is going to be our new president, okay? And that's because the individual has said things that are against the tenets of Martin Luther King, against the standards of our nation, from waterboarding to let's build a wall. Now, we need a wall, of course. We need a wall to stop electronic intrusions, which we've had at movie companies, the Chinese have done it, etc. That's the type of wall we need to have. But instead, we're going to go back and build a wall that's brick and mortar that people have been building for centuries instead of building an electronic wall to protect our intellectual properties that we have in the United States. So I think that the vice president, people that have seen him that are black individuals, that are Afro-American individuals, are probably going to be boycotting. And some of them are radio personalities and TV personalities that have recently met with him. And I know there is a call to basically boycott these people and stop subsidizing them, okay? So I think the way Mr. Trump is going to have to do it is the civil rights legend said that if Mr. Trump called him and said, take me to Selma, he would escort him and give him a guided tour to Selma. But he's not going to invite Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump has got to reach out to these people that he figures are going to help his administration properly govern. If not, our next 4 years are going to be just hellacious.
Great. Our next 4 years are going to be hellacious because Donald Trump does not know how to interact with the media. And the media is going to have a field day with Donald Trump and his tweeting. John Lewis chose to say that on the day of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s celebration. And all Donald Trump had to say is, I totally respect John Lewis and what he's done for the country. I hope he has a chance to get over his feelings and bridge the gap and show up at the inauguration. But he does not have the savvy or the humble spirit to say anything like that. He has a bodacious background, and the media is going to play him for 4 years like never before.
Well, there's also 20 other congressmen or more that won't be attending the event as well. And as you well know, that the inauguration has had some problems with getting entertainers signed up to perform.
Yeah.
And also, the number of buses supposedly that coming from the Women's March, which is the following day, is like 1,200 buses and maybe 200 buses for the inauguration day. So there isn't a gigantic amount of enthusiasm similar to the enthusiasm that they had for the previous office holder or the current office holder. But, you know, so I would hope that maybe there's something happens that will turn this around in a positive direction. But the only positive direction I could see would be the initiating that direction from the president-elect. But it does not seem that he's inclined to do that.
You know, we need to really get past the hatred and the negative dialogue that we're experiencing right now in America. I mean, I've never seen anything like this. Dr. Martin Luther King had some powerful words that he said. David, can you remind us of those words that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said?
You know, I'm not sure that it'll come through. For some reason, we're having some... Well, maybe we can do it this way. Let me do it this way.
Not today and tomorrow. I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day.
All right, were you able to get to hear that?
Yes. Those were words. Those were words from a dying man, a dead man. How can we get past what we are experiencing now? Does anyone have any idea or any solutions as to how we get past what we're currently experiencing?
We're just going to have to rock the boat. We're going to have to get in the boat, and we as men are going to have to interlock with each other's arms to build this circle of trust and unity among each other and understand each other's ups and downs and whatever it takes for us to, you know, make us, the United States, just a better place. I mean, we have a lot of, I think there are more good people in this United States than there are bad people. I think we have a questionable person who we don't know what's going to happen in the next 4 years, and we just have to do one foot ahead of the other in terms of, you know, when we get to our jobs and stuff, trying to be equal with those who are not our equals, and so that we all come out for the better.
And to add to that, David, if somehow we could promulgate, facilitate, and accentuate people actually sitting down and talking to each other, different races, different creeds, different nationalities, different walks of life, different in every way, that would be a large foot forward in getting people to understand, either understand to disagree in a constructive way and come up with solutions, or understand and finally agree on something. We seem to come back to that all the time, from gang members to politicians to housewives to businessmen and women to retirees, everybody. We always seem to come back, oh, we need to talk some more. But we don't. We don't talk enough to understand each other's pain, each other's concerns, each other's pluses and minuses. And until we do that, we're as Don said, we're gonna do very little to get ourselves off this negativism and this negative track that we seem to be going down at lightning speed.
I think that's going to be very difficult to do, and I hate to be the naysayer and sound negative. I mean, I wish that we could all get together and openly discuss these things, but I honestly don't see that happening, because I think this election has polarized this country like I've never seen it before. And even within my own family, you know, I'm the only one that voted for Hillary. My other two brothers, and David, I read you what one of my brothers posted on Facebook yesterday. My other two brothers voted for Trump, and there's this disdain between us. And you know, we're brothers. We're blood. And do you know what one of my brothers told me when I was trying to talk to him about Hillary? And he said, Ronnie, I don't want to hear it anymore. You're making my blood pressure go up. He just didn't even want to talk about it. So, it's actually really scary, and that's in my own family. So imagine, and we're obviously the same race, so imagine when you're talking about racial inequalities and all these other things added into the equation, I honestly don't see it happening.
Ron?
Yeah, I don't see it happening either, and there is no reason, because there's a power play that's just been conducted during our recent election, so when you're in power and you figure that you're the majority, there is no reason why you need to open a conversation up. You need to get the people that are in the minority to follow your lead. That's what really is that's trying to happen right now. So I don't see any conversation during the next 4 years whatsoever. And the last thing I'd like to say is on this Martin Luther King speech. At the time he gave that speech, he was in the Washington Monument area, and there was a demonstration, and it took a long time for a lot of people to recognize that speech as being beneficial, for recognizing the march as being beneficial. And even when, after many years, we had states, and Virginia is one of them, where they could not pass a law to celebrate his birthday. They had to share that date with a Civil War general to be comfortable. So there was a feeling that we are split. Okay, let's recognize Martin Luther King, but if we do that, let's do Jackson Lee Day as well. And so there we are. We are a split nation, and nobody's going to communicate because the people in power don't feel that they have to.
But
I think it's true.
Martin Luther King went the positive way. He constantly tried to communicate in a positive way, in a nonviolent way that resonated with more than just the African American population. It resonated with a lot of people, including me, and I thought he was a unbelievably wonderful human being, that his life was cut too short. But he's an example of doing it, I think, the right way.
And I agree with that, but unfortunately, all the George Wallaces have come to the front.
Well, who said, David, who said that dialogue was going to be some simple fix? We're hung up on the fact that we want to press a button, snap a shot, do whatever, and we're going to have a quick fix. We're not going to have a quick fix. We didn't get in this mess quickly. But we've got to find a way to work at it.
I do think so, but I'm not sure that I can't see, okay, I can't see me sitting down talking to a group of men who thought the opposite of me is going to change anything. But what I can
I would
say
love
is,
that opportunity. Why wouldn't you like that?
I would love it, but I don't see it changing anything. Because that's years and years of whoever they are instilled in them and their generations behind them listening to what they're said. But what I do know is if I can be the best I can, I will be their boss one day. And then they will have to listen. And I think that's the kind of presentation we need to take. Those of us, and minority, black, African, whoever, white, anybody, if you want to change something, you got to get in charge.
You're not going to be able to
talk to somebody.
That gives me an opportunity.
Or be a positive leader.
That
yes,
gives me an opportunity
I think that's the
to
way.
Step in. That
yes.
gives me an opportunity to step in, gentlemen. This is a man's voice. And this is a voice where you can voice your opinion. Gentlemen, I like to paint the scene. We have a very short time left for the show. I want to paint the scene. Each of you have 1 minute to give your opinion. The scene is set. Donald Trump has just been elected president of the United States. He's in the White House Friday, and you have a meeting at the White House Saturday morning to sit down and talk with the president, Donald Trump, Saturday morning after the inaugural ball Friday night. What would you say to him? You have 1 minute, and it's being recorded across the world. Jeremiah, you start.
Well, I would honestly say anything I had to say to him would go in one ear and come out the other. Maybe if I was talking about some investments or if I wanted to buy some relative property or if he wants to talk about money, the actual social issues and different issues we have in this world today, I don't think is of great concern. I believe Trump wanted to be in power for his reasons, not to be a Obama, not to be a great president to me, Clinton, you know what I mean? But I would, just like David said, I would feel as if I'm sitting down with a person that's, and we're not completely communicating. You're going to listen because that's your job, but you're not going to heed or want to fix anything that we speak of or do anything.
Thank you, Jeremiah. Thank you, Jeremiah. Ron, you have a date with the president. You're at the White House.
This ought to be good.
Speak.
Well, what I would tell him is very simple. I would tell him that the universe does not revolve around the United States and that he should not be so pompous to think that we are the end all, and that cooperation around the world with the different countries that we've had great relationships with for decades, you know, is critical to not just our survival here in the United States, but really for peace around the earth. And that would be my advice to him.
Thank you, Ron. Bruce, you're at the White House, and you're speaking to the president-elect, Donald Trump.
Uh-oh.
The mic is in your hand.
Wow. Here we go.
All right. Okay. First of all, Mr. President, I sure would like you to tell me in about one quarter of my time, what is it that motivates you to do your job, the role that you've been elected by the populace to run? I would like to hear whether he is going to give me an answer that is all about Mr. Trump or all about the country and the team that's around him. If he gives me the right answer, and you gentlemen know what answer would be the right of those, correct one of those two, I would then say, I'll give you some advice But I'd like to hear how you're going to accomplish that, because you've got a lot of people out there, maybe half the country, if not more, and a lot of minority groups or other groups that didn't vote for you. How are you going to win them over in this 4 years? Because if you cannot do that, sir, you cannot govern in an effective way. You have to bring the groups together, and I want to hear how you're going to do that.
Sounds good to me, Bruce. Well, you know, we got a gentleman that's very close to the White House. We didn't have to fly him in. In fact, he caught his limousine, and we're going to deliver him straight to the White House. His name is Frank. Frank, your limousine is pulling up to the White House. Donald Trump is waiting for you in the Oval Office. You have the mic.
Well, you know, you put me in a real tough situation, because I would have to be a prisoner being taken to the White House to have a discussion because I honestly do not believe in wasting my valuable time talking to a wall. So I would say that, you know, I would commend him for splitting the nation and building insecurity in the nation. And that what is happening, and I'd be talking the opposite force to him. Basically, I'd be saying to him that if you keep doing what you're doing, this nation is going to fall apart and succumb to other forces, because the people themselves are not united. And so the things you're doing are working very well for disunifying this country. And so he would have to make, you know, he would have to want to make a change himself and be motivated to do so. I just don't think talking to him would be very beneficial.
Wow. Well, now we come to the leader of a man's voice, David Shorter. David, you've always wanted to talk with Donald Trump. You've got your chance now.
Because I know his personality and who he is, what I would tell Donald Trump, I wouldn't sit there and talk about nothing. I would say, Donald, you need me on your staff. You need to get me and hire me, because you don't have a pulse on a large number of middle class in the United States, and you need somebody in your cabinet to help keep a tab on that and help you to make laws and stuff that's going to help these people, because I don't see anybody in your cabinet or anything that's going to do that, and you don't have anybody doing that. So you need to hire me, and here's my numbers to get me in place.
So Dave, everybody's privileged, huh?
Pardon me? Most of them are.
Everybody's privileged.
They need somebody. Somebody needs to be in there to, when they're passing all these crazy laws, to say, no, that's not going to help the middle class. You guys need to do this, to give them some thought. They might not listen to you. They might not do it. But he needs to have somebody in there on the pulse telling him the opposite of what they're trying to do or what they want to hear. Anyway.
David, you said a lot. I'd like to say this. Mr. Trump, President Donald Trump, you have children that control 20 different businesses in 20 different countries across the world. You have the opportunity to choose 2 to 3 Supreme Court justices that will govern me for the rest of my life. 2/3 of all the governors in America are Republican. You control the Senate and you control the House. And now you're the President of the United States. Are you going to be a dictator, or are you going to run this like a democracy? You have a very important position to make history in America. This is your moment. Don't blow
and,
it, or else
and
you're
fired. As soon as you walk out the office and they get through laughing, you get in your car and leave.
And he's going to say, who does guy think he is?
I know.
Okay, I'm sure.
You remember who you're talking to, Don?
No, how did he get in here?
I know.
Real.
Mr. Wiggins,
wait a minute.
I want
wait a minute.
My
who
staff.
Let him in?
You're fired. You're fired.
Well said, Mr. Don. Well said.
Amorosa, get him out of here.
I know, there you go. Amorosa, get him out of here. All right. Don, we're hitting 7 o'clock. We're at 6:59, so if you could make some closing comments for us.
No, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to host the show today, David. I think you've done a fantastic job over the last year and a half or so. This is a man's voice, and now we invite more men to tune in.
Have a good week, everybody.
You too.
Be good. See you after the inauguration.
Oh, Lord.
Happy Martin Luther King's Day tomorrow.
Yeah, happy Martin King Day.
For those who care.
We better all care.
New text message received.
David, are you still on?
Yes.
Can you keep this line open? I want to try a microphone.
Pardon me?
Can you keep this live for a few minutes to try a microphone with you?
Yeah, because my whole thing went down. I'm on my phone.
Mine went down too, and then I brought it back up. I wonder what happened.
I don't know, but you know, it was Ron that was all that static, and I went in to try to figure out what was going on, and when I was doing that, I went down, and I couldn't get it back up.
You pulled me off when you went down, then.
Wow.
Because I went down too. I went to my phone. Then while I was on my phone, I tried to bring the computer back up. It came back up, and I hung up on my phone.
Wow. My whole thing, everything went down on my line. My broadcast. So now I'm just on my phone. My headphones, my microphone, everything went down.
I'm on my computer again.
Okay. I'm on my phone. I'm not even on the system.
You could probably get back on now, but let me try this. Hold on a second here.
What kind of microphone do you have there, buddy?
Oh, I have the Pro microphone.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, good.
Can you hear me better than you did before?
About the same.
It sounds a little bit better, but I think it's a little bit muffled a little bit.
I've got it supposedly has a little mic on the earphone set, and I wanted to see if that made
that's
it
good.
Better.
Now you sound a little better. Yeah, now you sound better.
You're right.
Yeah, probably the first couple of seconds was a little muffled, but it sounds better now, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds really
okay.
Good. Matter of fact, this is really good. Yeah, I like you. It sounds
well,
better.
You know what you ought to do then, David? Send out, you can get these very cheap. Send out a little note to all of us. Get a nice pair of earplugs with a mic in the line. And that's
right.
Easily. And that's what I'm talking on right now.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
But see, I have the iPhone 7. And I don't know if it's my phone or the earphones, the earplugs or whatever, but, like, it messes up every time I put them in. I've tried it on probably the second broadcast, and it was messing up a little bit. I sound muffled or it was crazy. But I'm going to take my phone over to Apple and see what it is.
You know, Jeremiah.
Actually, let me
get on your computer. Get on your computer. And there's no static either, David. None.
That's because but Ron had the static, and I need to call Ron to figure out why.
What was Ron using?
I don't know, because he was going back and forth because he kept coming in as Ron, and then came out as he was going in and out on two different instruments.
Yeah.
The one he stayed on was the one with all the static. So I have to call him and figure out what was going on.
I would guess.
Yeah, we had like
might.
25, 30 minutes of that static for sure.
Yeah, it was
terrible.
Yeah,
and I usually can cut that out, but once I start checking and my mics went down, I couldn't cut him out no more. Something happened when I was checking the static.
Jeremiah, you were on your phone the whole time?
Yes, I was. I'm actually at work. I'm sitting in the car with the windows.
I'm surprised you stayed on the whole time. I was surprised you were in, because I know you told me you were at work and had to get off. So I was.
Well, he was on his phone.
It's been really slow.
Okay.
David, he wasn't on the system. He was on his phone.
No, I know, but I thought he was going to go back to work. I thought he was getting out of the show.
Yeah, because I told David I was going to do about 45 minutes today.
Oh, okay.
But he stayed the whole time.
Yeah, so I wanted to test this microphone. So this is the way I'm going to try and do it this way.
This is so much better. This is probably the best you've been there, Bruce, on that microphone.
Good. And see, I got nice earplugs in, and I can hear you very easily.
Okay, Bruce, do me a favor. I'm going to shut the show down, and then I'm going to start it up again, and then I'm going to text you to call in, and let's see if it works. Because I want to see why I can't do it.
Okay.
All right, Jeremiah. I will get with you next week too, because I'm going to shut the show down. So it's going to lose everybody.
Okay.
Okay, no problem.
All right. Okay.
Bye.